Yeah.
At the time,
but you got it within your 39 characters, which is important.
I was 5 feet taller, but it's one level at that one, and it fitted straight away.
All right. Listen, thank you very much indeed for coming on.
Thanks.
That's William Gallagher, sometime entertainment man at CFAX. It's just coming up to 1 o'clock. Must watch is coming your way next.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The 5 Live News with Dina Campbell. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, has told Labour's annual party conference in Liverpool she has a relentless focus on the financial priorities of the British people. During her speech, which was briefly interrupted by someone protesting about arms sales to Israel, she promised there would be no return to austerity. But she said the state of the public finances had forced her to make difficult decisions, such as cuts to some pensioners' winter fuel allowance.
I will not duck those decisions, not for political expediency, not for personal advantage. Faced with that £22 billion black hole that the Conservatives left this year, and with a triple lock ensuring that the state pension will rise by an estimated £1,700 over the course of this Parliament, I judged it the right decision in the circumstances that we inherited.
A non-binding conference vote on the government's plans to cut the winter fuel allowance for millions of pensioners has been delayed. It's thought the vote will now take place on Wednesday as the conference is wrapping up. The leader of the Unite Union, Sharon Graham, who's calling for the plan to be scrapped, accused the government of trying to silence the voice of pensioners and workers. While the Chancellor was speaking, members of the Royal College of Nursing announced they'd voted to reject her offer of a 5.5% pay award. It comes a week after doctors accepted a 22.5% rise. The RCN said two-thirds of nursing staff voted against the award, with 145,000 members casting a vote. Elsewhere, Lebanon's health ministry says at least 100 people have been killed and more than 300 injured in a heavy Israeli bombardment in the south of the country. The Israeli military said it had targeted hundreds of Hezbollah positions after warning civilians living nearby to leave. Israel's ambassador to the UK is Tzipi Khotovali.
It's not just that it became a ghost city, they've also been totally under massive destruction. Houses being fired day by day. People are losing any chance to go back to their homes because everything being destroyed by rockets. This is something that Israel cannot carry on with. This is something that the government is committed that the citizens of the north will be back to their homes and the peace will be restored to our northern border.
70% of sub-postmasters say they've experienced unexplained discrepancies on the Horizon IT system since January 2020. The findings come from a YouGov survey commissioned by the inquiry looking into the computer scandal at the post office. The inquiry begins its final phase today, looking at where the lessons have been learned. That's your news. Here's Delith Lloyd with your sport.
Dina, thank you. In cricket's One Day Cup final, Glamorgan have set Somerset 187 to win at Trent Bridge. Glamorgan made 186 for 7 in their innings. The final was due to be played yesterday but was washed out, and a poor forecast later means it's been reduced to 20 overs a side. Coverage continues on 5 Sports Extra. Somerset in reply, by the way. 14 without loss in the third over. Everton have refused to comment on reports that the Friedkin Group are in advanced talks to buy the club. Chairman Dan Friedkin, who also owns Serie A side Roma, had agreed a deal in principle to purchase current owner Mashiri's 94% stake back in June. Talks were called off a month later, though, after the two parties failed to finalise an agreement. But sources now suggest a deal could be close. And the former Premier League referee and ex-head of referees Keith Hackett has told 5 Live that Leandro Trossard should have had a bit more common sense ahead of his sending off at Manchester City. The Arsenal forward was shown a second yellow for kicking the ball away after he challenged Bernardo Silva.
Coming up this week on BBC Radio 5 Live.
Tomorrow, 5 Sports Extra has ball-by-ball coverage of England versus Australia in the third ODI.
And is it a clean as a whistle back over the land-led boundary?
And tonight from 7, join Mark Chapman for the Monday Night Club.
This could be a long 2 hours.
What have I got myself in for?
5 Live Sports.
Listen on BBC Sounds. This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
Adrian Childs.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
It's just gone 4 minutes past one. In a moment, we'll be getting into this week's must watch. First, though, we need to reflect on what's happening in the Middle East. Officials in Lebanon say 100 people have been killed, more than 300 wounded after Israel stepped up attacks in the south of the country this morning. The IDF says it's attacked 300 Hezbollah targets, having earlier warned Lebanese civilians to move away from areas used by the Iran-backed group for military purposes. Hezbollah's deputy leader has said it's now in an open-ended battle of reckoning with Israel. Our security correspondent Frank Gardner is here. Well, I suppose it's not new news, is it, Frank, that Hezbollah considers itself in an open-ended battle of reckoning with Israel? It's been that way for a while.
Yeah, it has. And I think you've got to separate the rhetoric from the actions in this. You know, there's always been quite a lot of superlative, hyperbolic rhetoric on both sides of the border. What's changed, though, is the nature of this conflict. So for the last 11 months, there's been a slowly increasing tempo of cross-border fire on that border between Lebanon and Israel. Israel on the one hand, Hezbollah on the other. What changed, though, in the last few days was this extraordinary pager attack where everyone assumes it's Israel. Israel hasn't said it was them, but there's no other contenders to have sabotaged thousands of these pagers that blew up in people's hands, pockets and faces, inflicting horrific injuries and dealing quite a major blow to Hezbollah. They've responded with increasing rocket fire. What it comes down to now is who blinks first. Israel is trying to clear away Hezbollah from the northern border so that its own residents can return to their homes and businesses and farms in the north of Israel. Hezbollah is saying, we're not backing down. You can bomb us, you can carry out airstrikes, but we are resilient and we're not stopping shelling those areas until there is a ceasefire in Gaza. Israel's kind of floundering a bit in Gaza. It has been there for 11 months. It massively degraded Hamas, the other militant organization in the region, the other big one, but it hasn't defeated them altogether. And it's now shifting its attention to the north in the hopes that it can so hurt, so damage Hezbollah, so degrade it that it eventually agrees to some kind of ceasefire, that it withdraws north of something called the Litani River, which is about 30K north of the border, and therefore Israel's own residents, citizens, can return to their businesses. So to draw a kind of analogy here, if you imagine that this was in Britain, it would be the equivalent of everybody living north of the River Trent lives in fear of constant rocket and fire coming from Scotland. And the Israelis want to be able to stop that and return things to as normal. I'm not sure it's going to work without a ceasefire.
Having said that, it's difficult to see what in the short term Hezbollah can do to fire back, to retaliate, to respond to what is the offensives from Israel that we've seen in the last few days. I mean, its communications are completely down for obvious reasons, because they can't use telephones, pagers or walkie-talkies. It doesn't leave them with much.
Well, they go back to mobile phones, which can be hacked and tracked by Israeli cybersecurity specialists, but it hasn't stopped the fact that they've got a massive arsenal of up to 150,000 rockets and drones, and they fired 150 in the last few hours. And what has changed is that as Israel is expanding its target range in Lebanon, to previously it was just across the border in South Lebanon, they're now hitting targets in Beirut itself, the Hezbollah headquarters, sort of stronghold, a place called Dahia, also the Bekaa Valley. And Hezbollah's responding by hitting targets further south in Israel. They've started to hit Haifa, which is pretty much the commercial capital. It's the big port on the Mediterranean coast. And that's something they haven't done before in the last 11 months. So they're inflicting a small degree of pain on Israel. And the Israeli government has had to warn its citizens, look, this is going to be a tough, long battle. We will be resilient and victorious, etc., but there's going to be a bit of pain involved. And ultimately, neither side wants to go to this full-scale, full-blown war because of the damage it's going to be. For Lebanon, it means decimating the country's infrastructure, hitting Beirut Airport, knocking out power stations, knocking out desalination plants, reservoirs, bridges, buildings, etc. For Israel, it means that Hezbollah, if they chose to, would unleash so many missiles and rockets that they could overwhelm Israel's air defences, and these would rain down on places like Tel Aviv, Eilat, Haifa, Petah Tikva, all the kind of the whole commercial heart of Israel would be deluged, quite possibly, in missiles. And that's not something that the government is going to take lightly.
Well, we're always led to believe that Iran is absolutely key here, but we haven't heard much from Iran. Where are they in all this at this moment?
Well, Hezbollah, of course, are Iran's creation. They created them as a proxy in the early 1980s, and they funded them, equipped them, trained them. They are their Shiite Muslim allies, as opposed to Hamas, who are predominantly Sunni. But Iran, you're quite right, is staying fairly quiet on this. I mean, Iran is implacably opposed to the state of Israel. They've several times called for its annihilation, but they don't want to go to a full-scale war either. It suits them to have Hezbollah as this menacing force on the border that keeps Israel in check, that stops just short of a full-scale war. I don't think Iran wants to see a full-scale war either, because it could well pull in Iran and start, you know, end up with Israeli airstrikes on Iran's nuclear research capabilities. Then you've got the United States and their warships pulled in. That's what everybody's afraid of, and everyone's trying to ratchet this down.
Frank, thanks very much. Our security correspondent, Frank Gardner. We will get to Must Watch imminently, I promise you. Firstly, though, our health editor, Hugh Pym, joins us quickly. We've had this rejection, Hugh, from the nurses of the government's offer of a pay rise of 5.5%. What can you flesh out there for us?
Well, Adrian, just to be clear, yeah, this was a consultative exercise to find out what members of the Royal College of Nursing in England thought of the 5.5% pay award announced by the government back in July. And two-thirds have said they don't think it's adequate. They voted against it in a turnout of 145,000, which the RCN is say is high. And they are regarding this, the RCN, as a message to the government that nurses care very much about patient safety and how stretched they are sometimes on the front line and how there's a need to recruit more staff and that 5.5% is not adequate in their view. Now, I'm guided by sources at the RCN. This does not mean an immediate ballot for industrial action. They want the government, particularly Wes Streeting, the Secretary of State, to take note of this and come back with some supportive noises. So at the moment, this is very much a message to the government, which the RCN say is pretty clear, but obviously no further discussion on strike action at the moment, but it certainly hasn't been ruled out.
Hugh, thanks very much. Our health editor, Hugh Pym. It's just gone 12 minutes past one.
Must Watch on BBC Radio 5 Live.
Welcome back to another week of Must Watch. It's that time of the week where we talk all things TV, review the big television releases with Hayley Campbell and Scott Bryan. Look, it's very nice to meet you both.
Hello.
What have we got this week?
We are looking at Ludwig, which is a new David Mitchell. Excuse me. We are looking at Ludwig, which has David Mitchell playing a TV detective.
Mm-hmm. Hayley?
We've also got Agatha All Along, which is a spin-off from Marvel's WandaVision, and also A Very Royal Scandal, which is all about the infamous Emily Maitlis, Prince Andrew interview.
Okay. Well, I had a little look at that last night. Really look forward to hearing what you've got to say about it. Shall we have a look through some of our emails? What's come in?
So we've got this from Nick. It says, greetings to the must-watch family, the two naughty kids and whoever is normally in charge this week. Many must-watches I totally get. I am grateful for and appreciate the recommendations, but feel I am sometimes the only one who doesn't get a lot of very popular, well-reviewed and must-watched programmes. Mm-hmm. The Sopranos, the New Jersey shtick and morality and endless self-pitying means I've never got beyond the first episode of the first series, despite really trying and wanting to get on the bandwagon. Mr. In Between, Hayley, just not dark or funny.
Nick is just mentioning all of my favourite shows.
I love this. The OA, please, please just return it to what it was about. I feel invested in it so much, but I got nothing in return. Anything with Al Pacino in it, overacting as an art form.
Oh, come on.
I love how much. I wish you read this out this email personally. I could go on, but feel there's something wrong with me. Is there a cure? Please don't say Gardener's World. I'm not an insomniac. All the best, Nick.
This email is just an attack at me.
I do get the feeling sometimes if everyone's enjoying something and I'm not, then I do blame myself. I don't think everyone...
Well, sometimes it is your fault.
No, she's right. I'm just trying to think. There was a good example of something really... Oh, the Lotus, White Lotus.
Oh, thing. The White Lotus.
I just couldn't make... I literally couldn't stay awake till the end of any episode.
Why not?
I don't know. I must have just found it boring. Whatever was happening, that went straight over my head. And I was surrounded with people in my own house and the world who loved it. But I wasn't being obtuse. I just couldn't stay awake. I don't know what it was.
Were you bored of, like, rich people doing things?
Yeah, but there's other sort of nonsense, like that perfect couple thing, which was people.
Yeah. That's more rich people.
And
nonsense.
I thought it was tosh, but I stayed with it till the end. I wasn't getting drowsy.
You watched The Perfect Couple, but you couldn't stay awake through The White Lotus.
As I said, I blame myself. I couldn't hate myself more for it. I forgot to get your must watches.
What was
for this week?
What did you think of the dance routine at the start of each episode of A Perfect Couple? Because if you haven't seen it, they just go into essentially a flash mob, and it's disorientating.
Yeah, well, it gets more disorientating as you go through it, where there's people, you know, I think some of them are actually been murdered.
Yeah,
and then
there's a dead person dancing.
That kind of saved it for me, because I thought it was like they were all in on the joke of the whole thing, how preposterous the plot was, and the actors demonstrated by doing this very fun flash mob dance at the end.
None of them wanted to do it.
Against their will.
They all complained about it. No, everyone was like, my character would never dance like this. Liev Schreiber was the only one. He plays the husband. He was the only one who wanted to do the dance routine. He was practicing it in his trailer. Everyone else was on the WhatsApp trying to weasel out of it.
It reminded me a bit that, you know, at the end of Miranda, where they all do a dance, they used to do a dance together. It reminded me a bit like that, where it's like breaking the fourth wall, is it? Anyway, we've digressed. Where were we?
That's what next, we're doing.
This is Must Watch Welcome.
Yeah. Julie's been enjoying The Night Sleeper, which was reviewed last week. Mm-hmm. He said, just sat and binge-watched the whole season. Must say I thoroughly enjoyed it. Programme I just had to keep watching. Thrilling. And easy watching. Can't understand why people didn't enjoy it.
I'm not so sure whether I would say the word night sleeper about a runaway train is necessarily an easy watch, per se. No. I mean, it's a nonsense watch, but it's not a relaxed watch.
No, and if you've ever caught the sleeper train from Scotland to Euston, you've got new nightmares to add to the pile.
Well, you have. I mean, the one thing... I mean, I haven't seen it, but I'm told it's about this train hurtling towards London. Well, the sleeper doesn't hurtle.
No, it has little stops.
It has little stops, it trundles. But even when it's going quick, it doesn't feel very quick as you sleeplessly lie in your bunk thinking how cosy it is, but wondering if you're ever gonna fall asleep.
I once took that night sleeper and I was too excited to be on it. I couldn't sleep.
Yes, exactly.
And then I was like, what's the point? Why am I on this train?
You were posting pictures on Instagram of your little bed.
That's actually a different night sleeper service. That's the Riviera that goes to Cornwall. This is how I spend my spare time.
Okay, well,
train spotting.
Yes, I think I think sleepers are nicer in theory, prospect, than they are in practice. Mm-hmm. But anyway, is this must watch, not must travel? So,
spin off.
We've got this email from Nina in Emsworth, who got in touch about Flack, which is a show I recommended a while ago, where Anna Paquin plays a PR who has to try and avert disaster when all of her clients just have scandalous lives. So Nina says, this is such an awful program, but so compelling. I just binge watch the first series, so thank you for the recommendation. Is this really what it's like in the celebrity world? It makes you wonder. Might be. Anyway, keep up the good work. Love the show. Nina from Emsworth. Mm-hmm.
And we also got this from Diana. It says, hi there, new team and still amazing. After watching the second series of Colin from Accounts, it took me to another collaboration between wife and husband, Kaya and Bramall, called No Activity. It took me two episodes to get into it, there was very little activity, but soon the interpersonal relationships that develop in an otherwise dull setting, car, police response, call centre, through conversations of the undercover stakeout team and the responder team and the two criminals in a shipping container become funnier with every episode. I noticed later that Bob Odenkirk from Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad also features, and I can't wait. Anyway, worth reviewing, I feel, and that's from Diana.
I've watched that show and it's actually really good. You can find it on iPlayer.
It's called, an iPlayer?
Yeah, it's called No Activity. It's got the same people from Colin and Accounts. one of them works, the woman works in the call center and he is a detective in the car.
Yeah.
But it's funny.
Okay. And so your must watches for this week.
Right. So I've gone with Monsters, the Lyle and Eric Menendez story on Netflix. And this is less of a recommendation and more of a public service announcement for anyone who really loves Ryan Murphy's kind of tacky but really watchable TV shows. I always have to watch the crime ones, even though part of me knows they're bad. This one is the follow-up to the one he did about Jeffrey Dahmer, which is on Netflix. It focuses on the Menendez brothers who shot their parents in 1989. And the parents in this show are played by Javier Bardem and Chloe Savini. And much like what he did with Dahmer, this show tries to unpack the psychological reasons for why they went on to become murderers. And it all comes down to childhood abuse. But the thing with Ryan Murphy crime shows, they can never just come out. There's always a big controversy around them. With Dharma, it was all made without the consent of the victims' families, which was particularly bad because the show focused on the victims and their personal lives. And so it felt like something they should have cleared with the families if they were going to link them publicly again with their murderer. With this one, the two guys are still alive, so they've been able to see it. And it's controversial because they've included elements that the Menendez brothers say is untrue and relies too much on old ideas about male sexual abuse. And by doing so, it's setting everything backwards. And one of the brothers has released a statement from jail saying this. So if you like Ryan Murphy stuff, You're probably aware of what he's like.
Yeah.
You know that it's going to be a little bit trashy, a little bit homoerotic for like no reason. But always.
What do you mean, no reason? You mean,
well, he just like goes, yeah, these two, they were together. And you go, really? Were they? Probably not. But yeah, it makes sense in Ryan Murphy world. Mm-hmm. They are always weirdly watchable and I can't help myself. So it's Monsters on Netflix.
And I've got a show which I think everyone has watched, but I'm recommending purely because it is the anniversary. It has been 25 years yesterday since The West Wing debuted on American TV. In fact, this is actually Anniversary Mageddon because it's been 30 years since Friends debuted, 20 years since Lost debuted, and today is also the 50th anniversary of CFAX, right. RIP. But anyway, back to The West Wing.
Big day for Scott.
It truly, massive day. And yes, I do have these days logged in my calendar. Hardly a show that needs any introduction, written, created by Aaron Sorkin. I really want to highlight just the opening title of the first episode, because it's absolutely sublime and it just brings you in. It's this beautiful 3 minute 44 second sequence when you see John Spencer, of course, who plays Leo McGarry for late John Spencer, arriving for a day at work and him just getting pulled in different directions as you are given a first hand tour around the White House. And of course, there's been insiders who say that the layout does not in any way reflect it. It's infuriating when they watch it because they're going down corridors that don't exist. But I think it highlights this point in time on American TV when they just had these amazingly big sets and they could do, and of course the walking talk became very much the centerpiece of that show, but just having that buzz of activity, introducing all of the cast members who of course became shoot stars in their own right, and just sets the perfect introduction for what The West Wing ended up becoming, which was upmarket, aspirational, hopeful, which I don't think you have in many other political dramas, and inherently rewatchable. I mean, how many times have you ended up watching this show?
Yeah.
Have you noticed that when the opening sequence of The West Wing is on, you can sing the names of the actors and it all fits the beat of the theme song? I reckon if you do a rewatch, you'll get so heavily into the binge that you'll start doing it. And
I will do this, but I will do this when I am at home, when no one else is in the house.
And the last bit goes, Bradley Whitford, he's the best. That's how the song ends.
But you really do get into the weeds here, do you?
We haven't even touched on like bus routes, but that's usually what we're talking about.
So what we're reviewing first today. All right, this is interesting along the lines of what you just said about checking out the corridor, seeing if it's really laid out like that, because there were scenes in what I saw of It's a Very Royal Scandal
which was set in this very building, ostensibly, and I was suddenly perked up like a hawk. Hang on, look, is this right? Well, the outside bit is, but anyway, I don't know, and, like, does it matter?
No one got stuck in the revolving doors at the front.
So. Or waited for about 20 minutes out the lift. But anyway, we are reviewing a very royal...
What a start to the show that would be. Comes in a big flurry and then waits for 20 minutes at the lift and there's two not working.
Trust us, it would be incredibly relatable. We are reviewing a very royal scandal, which is on Amazon Prime Video. It is a three-part drama on the Prince Andrew Newsnight interview with Emily Maitlis from 2019. And if you think this is a bit of deja vu, you're right. I mean, because this is the second adaptation of this interview in the last 6 months. Earlier this year, Netflix unveiled Scoop, which we reviewed on Must Watch, which was based on the Newsnight producer Sam McAllister's memoir. And that mostly focused on how the Prince Andrew interview was secured. A very royal scandal focuses, I think, more on Maitlis and Prince Andrew. It's a bit more of a kind of a character study. Maitlis portrayed by Ruth Wilson and Prince Andrew portrayed by Michael Sheen. And also in episode 3, looks at the aftermath of the interview. In episode 2, Emily Maitlis is given a green light and the infamous interview begins.
Do you remember her?
No. I have no recollection of ever meeting her. I'm convinced that I was never in Tramps with her. There are a number of things wrong with that story, one of which is that I don't know where the bar is in Tramps. I don't drink. I don't think I've ever bought a drink in Tramps whenever I was there.
So is it a must watch?
Well, for me, it's a yes and also a no. So...
How does that work?
Well, I'll tell you.
Okay.
I wasn't expecting to enjoy this one as much as I did, but I watched all three episodes in one chunk, and I think everyone's doing a great job. I think Michael Sheen plays Prince Andrew in a way that makes you have sympathy for him, but also no sympathy for him when he throws these little tantrums. He's far more of a person than just an impression, I thought. And Joanna Scanlon plays a kind of version of her character in the thick of it. She plays his personal secretary who thinks it would be a good idea to do the interview and then ends up getting fired after it's broadcast. And it's just sort of heartbreaking watching her. This is less of a gotcha story than Scoop was, which, as Scott said, was the Netflix version that came out in April and starred Gillian Anderson as Emily Maitlis. And it was told from the perspective of Sam McAllister, played by Billy Piper, who was the booker. And I think this one, like Scott said, it's more both sides of the story rather than just Newsnight getting a scoop. I thought Scoop was a fun watch, and weirdly, Rufus Sewell looked like he was wearing the flayed skin of Prince Andrew. It was like slightly too weird. But ultimately, it was a bit self-congratulatory and kind of a weird advert for Newsnight, and it didn't tell us anything we didn't already know. Whereas this one... It is more of a character study. It gives us a lot more behind-the-scenes stuff, not just in how they prepared for the interview, but also in how it affected everyone's private lives afterwards. So there was a lot more aftermath in this one. The reason I'm saying it's both a must-watch and not a must-watch...
Which I think is the first time that's ever happened in 5 years.
I know. I'm just not really sure this one needs to exist, which was my issue with Scoop. I think... it might be the issue of people within the media commissioning it, because within the media, it's a mad thing to have happened and no one can believe it. Whereas I'm not sure if you don't work in this building, you'd be that bothered about all the ins and outs of how it happened.
Well, it's interesting, but I would... What's the morning show? I mean, enjoyed that, but I've lived and suffered somewhat, as did my viewers in breakfast television. But, but I found it interesting, but I couldn't really understand... why anyone else found it that interesting, but people did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was sort of navel-gazing. Perhaps it's just brilliantly well done, and if it's brilliantly well done, you'll watch anything.
Yeah, well, I did find it well done, and I think the interview was shocking to watch at the time, but it does exist. It's on the internet already. I don't know. I don't think it needs to exist, but I did enjoy watching it.
Okay, we've had the book, we've had two TV series.
Yeah.
I mean, there is going to be a musical, there has to be.
Yeah, there already has been, actually. It was on Channel 4. It was a comedy one. We've reviewed it, Hayley, don't give me that face. It was about 2 years ago.
What? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, you're going to have to Google. Okay. I mean, this isn't a must-watch for me in terms of a royal, very royal scandal. I think just because you can't but help compare and contrast it to Scoop, which was out 6 months ago. Mm. And I think if Scoop didn't exist, which I think I have a more favourable review of than Hayley, I think I found Scoop kind of a bit of a love letter to journalism, showing all the component parts. It's not just the presenter, it's also the team. It's the amount of PR you have to wade through. It's all of the turnover, the clipping, the editing, the legal, you know, that kind of really shone the light on that. And I really quite liked that. Not so much of focusing on the interview itself. I think a very royal scandal, you can't help and go, oh, I've seen this before. Oh, I've seen that before. And like, that's not a failure of a show per se. It's just because we're in this strange environment in which we're having two shows that are remarkably similar that you can't help compare and contrast in your own head within only months. Mm. I mean, that's what I find very surreal about this whole thing. I found that it was a good character study into Prince Andrew and into Emily Maitlis, kind of highlighting that when you are in the spotlight of this huge interview, the consequences professionally, but also the consequences personally. I did, though, sometimes feel a bit kind of out of touch or feeling a bit odd, because from Prince Andrew's perspective, we don't really know too much about kind of what
happened. Yeah, there's conversations with him and between him and Fergie that are...
Yes.
But which, it's an interpretation. We say it's a good character study. It's a fascinating character study as it unfolds, but is it sort of true?
Well, I mean, that's what I kind of thought. Well, is it really? Can you really sort of find out how this will be for somebody?
Has Emily said anything about it?
She has said. I mean, I think it taps into very much her perspective, and I think that's what the third episode of the three, I think, is the strongest of the set, because you get to see kind of her. It taps into, for example, whether the highlighting of the interview kind of actually took away from the victim's the alleged victim's story, and I think that allowed kind of a bit more space that I think Scoop just did not tap into. I think just the bigger question is that, same with Hayley, what Hayley was saying, is there a justification for this? I'm not so sure.
I'm thoroughly enjoying listening to you talking about all this stuff. I let's watch the first one, mm-hmm. and based on your recommendation, I'm going to watch the second two.
Great.
If it kills me. No, I'll watch that.
Let us know if you fall asleep.
Okay. And what else we got coming up? We've got Hayley Scott looking at Marvel's Agatha All Along, spin-off series on Disney Plus, following a fan favourite character from the TV show WandaVision, and Ludwig, the BBC's new comedy mystery starring David Mitchell. It's just gone 1:30. Let's get the news and sport.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
With the 5 Live news, I'm Jill McKenzie. The Chancellor Rachel Reeves has told the Labour Party conference she has a relentless focus on the financial priorities of the British people. During her speech, which was briefly interrupted by someone protesting about arms sales to Israel, she promised there'd be no return to austerity in the autumn budget. Nurses in England have rejected the government's offer of a 5.5% pay rise for this financial year. The Royal College of Nursing says its members rejected the deal by two-thirds in a record high turnout. Lebanon's health ministry says 100 people have died and more than 300 are injured after heavy Israeli bombardment in the south of the country. Israel says it targeted hundreds of Hezbollah positions after warning civilians to leave. And a 14-year-old boy who took part in the summer riots sparked by the Southport stabbings has avoided criminal punishment after prosecutors decided the wrath of his parents was enough. The Director of Public Prosecution says the telling off the boy got after being marched to the police station was more effective than being taken to court. That's the news. Delith Lloyd has your sport.
Jill, thank you. In cricket's one-day cup final, Glamorgan have set Somerset 187 to win at Trent Bridge. Kevin Howells can bring us the latest.
It's still all rather surreal. This is a reserve day, of course. There is very low cloud around and the floodlights are on, reduced to 20 overs per side to try and get the final in before the rain arrives this afternoon. But it's still a cracking little game of cricket, this. Somerset are 80 for 2 right now. This is in the 12th over. This is a big challenge. It's a big total, 187. Sam Northeast earlier is 63 not out of 49 balls, 5 fours and a couple of sixes. Tim van der Gooten late on at 26 not out of 9 balls. Could prove the difference. That 15th over of the Glamorgan innings, bowled by Casey Aldridge, went for 29 runs. 187 is the target. Somerset 84 for 2 in the 12th over.
Kevin, thank you very much. Coverage does continue over on 5 Sports Extra. Everton have refused to comment on reports that the Friedkin Group are in advanced talks to buy the club. Chairman Dan Friedkin
Friedkin, who also owns Serie A side Roma, had agreed a deal in principle to purchase current owner Mashiri's 94% stake back in June. Talks, though, were called off in July after the two parties failed to finalise an agreement. Sources, however, suggest a deal now could be close. The former Premier League referee and ex-head of referees Keith Hackett has told Five Live that Leandro Trossard should have had a bit more common sense ahead of his sending off at Manchester City yesterday. The Arsenal forward was shown a second yellow for kicking the ball away after he challenged Bernardo Silva. John Stones, meanwhile, says he was extra motivated to make an impact after coming off the bench for City. Stones' 98th minute equaliser made it 2-2 at the Etihad Stadium and keeps City at the top of the Premier League for now.
You always want to play in these big games, and that was something that I was frustrated at, and obviously all the other guys that don't, and that's a difficult decision that the manager's got every game. And I wanted to approach the game as I do every time. If I'm not starting, I'm in a positive way, how can I impact the game? And today's turned out to be a big impact with being in the right place and putting the back of the net.
League two.
So yeah, really pleased.
League Two side AFC Wimbledon say they are forced to postpone tomorrow's third round League Cup tie against Newcastle because of extensive flooding of the River Wandle and surrounding areas. Wimbledon Stadium is closed until further notice. The semi-final lineup for the Scottish League Cup has been settled. Motherwell will play the holders, Rangers and Celtic, who knocked out Falkirk, will face Aberdeen. Here's the Celtic manager Brendan Rodgers.
Looking at the results and without knowing the performances, then result-wise they've been excellent. So yeah, when it comes around, it'll be a really good game.
And Daniel Dubois' promoter Frank Warren has told the BBC he hasn't ruled out the prospect of a rematch with Anthony Joshua. Dubois stopped Joshua in the fifth round of their fight at Wembley to retain his IBF world title. That's the latest from BBC Sport. Remember, you can listen at any time through your smart speaker by saying play BBC Sports News.
You've probably got a list of things your child needs for uni. Pans, cutlery, sheets, duvet, towels, you know. But this is a little reminder that they'll also need a TV licence to be covered to watch all the TV channels, live TV on streaming services and BBC iPlayer. On the downside, it's one more thing on your list. On the upside, you can continue to enjoy your favourite shows together on the family group chat. And they won't be bringing it home to be washed either. To find out more, search TV licence uni.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
We feel totally betrayed.
Welcome to Murrayfield.
I listen to you guys all the time.
Adrian Childs. Listen on BBC Sounds.
We'll be back with Must Watch very shortly. First, though, Matt Chorley will be here at 2, live at Labour Party conference in Liverpool,
which is where we'd want him today, certainly where he'd want to be. What have you got for us, Matt?
I've got absolutely soaking wet for you. That's what I've done, Adrian.
Right.
Okay. The weather is being very northern. Obviously, rain is available in other parts of the country. No, it's absolutely soaking, but the reason I'm wet is because I know you were listening into Rachel Reeves' speech earlier, and I watched it in a pub with four voters, normal people from here in Liverpool, to get their take in sort of real time. Watching along their reaction to Rachel Reeves' speech, so we'll bring you that. And of course, last night I went to a sober party, which is not often something that occurs at a party conference, but it was organised by some charities which work with people with alcohol addiction. And I caught up with Tony Adams, the actual Tony Adams, where I conducted an interview with him a few feet from the white piano that John Lennon wrote Imagine on. Because that's what happens when you're in Liverpool. You just try to find a quiet room to do an interview, and you find yourself surrounded by Beatles memorabilia.
And what did you drink at this sober party?
Non-alcoholic cocktails and some very nice food. I have to say, the food was some of the best canapé action I've had at a party conference. And they were serving very nice, pink, fruity, non-alcoholic cocktails.
Very good. And just your take on that speech, just in a couple of sentences, I'm interested.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, and actually it was really interesting watching along with some real people. I mean, clearly, you know, the first half was a lot of Tory bashing, which they still feel obliged to do. Second half, putting a little bit more meat on the bones of their plans, but perhaps not quite enough yet for people to be fully on board. I thought it was interesting, Rachel Reeves smiling a lot. This is clearly, we're supposed to be moving beyond the gloom.
Yeah.
And smiling more.
Okay, you'll be reviewing her smiles a bit later, I dare say. Matt Chorley, coming up at 2 o'clock. Thanks very much for that. It's almost 20 to 2.
Must Watch on BBC Radio 5 Live.
So welcome back to Must Watch. We already reviewed A Very Royal Scandal. We're going to be reviewing Catherine Hahn in Agatha All Along. But what are we reviewing first?
Our next one is Ludwig, starring David Mitchell as a reclusive puzzle settler. No, I'm going to have a go at another go at that, another run-up.
Here we go.
A puzzle setter. So he makes crosswords. And he assumes his twin brother James's identity after he goes missing in order to track him down, which means he has to adapt to James's life as a highly respected DCI within Cambridge's busy major investigations team. And he just ends up solving some crimes along the way. Here's a clip from episode one, where he is in character as his brother and tries to navigate gathering information and solving a completely unconnected murder.
John.
I didn't get to the office. There's no Matt Neville. I'm back outside and I'm supposed to be attending a crime scene.
What?
I didn't get to the office. There's no Matt Neville. I'm back outside.
Yes, no, I heard you the first time, John. What do you mean there's no Matt Neville?
I mean, James has a completely different partner from the one you told me about. That's what I mean. One that sat waiting for me to go and look at a dead solicitor with him.
No, that doesn't make any sense. I'm sure he would have told me if Matt had left or if he had a new partner or... wouldn't he?
He's looking at me.
Yes, it's probably not helped by the fact that you're standing there holding a phone that's older than the Bible.
Oh, God, I'm going to prison, aren't I?
No, you're not going to prison.
I'm impersonating a police officer.
Yes, but he's your brother.
That's really not the legal loophole you think it is.
So, Scott, does this clear the must-watch bar?
I wouldn't say it's a must-watch. I would say it's a good watch. We are allowed to say that now, aren't we?
We're allowed gradients now.
You I said... know. It is a must-watch and a not-a-must-watch at the same time, so let me have this. I mean, the concept of this is daft and completely unbelievable. You have a puzzle setter who is able to come up with and solve puzzles in seconds. He is a twin brother, of course, both played by David Mitchell, James, who is a DCI. He disappears. His wife, Lucy, played by Anna Maxwell-Martin, who, of course, you'll recognise from Line of Duty and just fantastic comic actor. She thinks that the right way to find out where he is essentially for twin brother John to pretend to be his brother at work to go and get this notepad. He turns up at work and lo and behold, he's thrown into a case because he can't admit that he is actually not a police detective and that he is his twin brother. So that's the concept. It's ludicrous, it's daft. I have to say, though, it kind of works because it is a bit ludicrous and it doesn't take itself too seriously. A lot of it is down to the comedy that happens when you are a police detective, when you're forced to be a police detective, when you have no police detective work in you. So, for example, you turn up at a crime scene and you want to throw up because you're seeing a dead body on the floor and everybody else is taking it seriously, particularly when somebody else says, this is big Netflix six-part series big. It's also, I think, the way that it ends up spinning is that because John is incredibly smart at puzzles, he realises that actually these cases are a bit like puzzles. So the first one is this kind of logic. It feels like you're watching an episode of Only Connector at parts. It feels like a kind of a very logical puzzle that he's trying to do. There's one later in the series, which is apparently an elaborate game of Spot the Difference. I'm not sure how that will work as a TV show, but I quite like the ingenuity. It's doing something a little bit different. It's a bit kind of offbeat, a bit like Only Murders in the Building is, which is that sublimely, hugely successful Disney Plus series, which I think has that similar style of tone. I think the reasons why it might not work for some people, I think firstly, it works because it's BBC One prime time. I think it knows what it is very well. I think, though, it might miss the heart of what a good crime series is, no matter how serious it is, where you kind of play the detective. And I don't know about you, Hayley, but I could not work out at all the case that is in episode one as a viewer. And I think that they might have missed a trick there because it might have gone completely over our heads. But I do like the fact that it's doing something a little bit different. How many times have we seen a detective be the same in every single kind of, you know, the all of the hallmarks of them being depressed and by themselves and dishevelled, etc.?
Stop describing my favourite show.
Anyway, I like the fact that it's doing something a little bit different. It doesn't hit it massively off the mark, but it does contain funny moments that I enjoyed.
See, I didn't think the point was for us to at any point think we could work out the crime. I don't think we're supposed
but
to
But do you
know.
Think that something's lost by that?
No, not really, because it's more about the characters, I think. For this one, I've said it's, yeah, sure, why not, as a must-watch. It's not something that I'm raving about, but I think it's the same grade as you.
We need to start marking this as a
I know,
on a sort of chart.
Yes,
in the
and
old
no.
days with Nahal, it used to work because we used to have it very fun. He used to be the rule, the kingmaker, deciding yeah. whether it was a must or not a must watch.
Well, he was like a thumbs up. He was like Caligula. We couldn't have a sideways. We couldn't say it was in between. We had to say yes. See, or no.
I had to say yes or no.
I couldn't do that to you. It would be sheer hypocrisy on my part as an inveterate fence sitter. So if you want to say it isn't, it isn't. For everyone, I'm happy.
I thought this was fun. It's got crimes in it, but they're not very dark, and it's not really a whodunit because, like Scott says, you're not given enough information to try and solve the crime yourself. You're basically just along on the ride to watch David Mitchell be a bit like Mark from Peep Show if he got a job in the police. there's a new crime every week, so it's more like a sitcom than a drama that follows one story on and on. And it's more along the lines of a cozy crime thing rather than a bleak one. You know, very little attention is spent on the actual crime. It's all about the characters. But it doesn't feel patronizing like those cozy ones that bother me. You know, the ones with all the old people in the English villages.
The one that I quite liked earlier this year that was on Drama.
Yeah,
a TV channel that
absolutely dreadful stuff. But I think if you love David Mitchell, you'll love this because he's doing basically more of that thing you'd like. It's not breaking any molds. He's playing an anxious man who'd rather be left alone. He's sardonic. He likes his routines and he resents having to break them to be someone else or to help. Or he has to leave the house, basically. He's a man who doesn't want to leave the house and they're making him do it. So that, to me, as someone who hates leaving the house, is very fun to watch.
I haven't seen it, but just from that clip, it struck me as being the humour seemed, the comedy seemed sort of quite telegraphed, quite specific. The interplay was obviously sort of a gag.
Yeah.
But it's not like a more gentle thing like The Detectorists, you know, where it's sort of the gentle humour washed over you. You felt they were, you know, really punching.
Somebody's written a comedy script very tightly.
Yeah.
I was also surprised that this is an hour. I thought this could have been half an hour, mm-hmm. per se, because you don't normally have an hour show. Yet again, I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. We should move on to review number three. What have we got?
It is Agatha All Along, which is a spin-off of WandaVision, the hit Marvel show that debuted in 2021. That show was acclaimed for how well it portrayed specific genres of TV and also well-known shows over five decades. So they did, what you didn't expect was their kind of take on Malcolm in the Middle, which was the 90s sitcom. This new spin-off continues that for a bit with, in my view, a pitch-perfect spoof of those gritty crime thrillers like Broadchurch and Mayor of Easttown. You think you're watching a different show by accident to start off. Then you see Agatha Harkness, played by Catherine Hahn, who you might recognise amongst other things from Parks and Recreation. She is a witch who has lost her powers and is desperate to get them back, so has the ambition of getting a coven of witches together. She's also joined by Joe Locke, who is from Heartstopper, but he is playing so far a cryptic new role. Let's hear a clip from episode one, where Agatha wanders into the streets looking for answers about what's going on.
What is going on? Hey, Miss Agnes, you feeling okay today?
Stop talking! How long have I been here?
What?
How long have I been living in this cesspool of a town?
You don't remember.
Catch me up.
About 3 years.
3 years? What?
Ooh, we try not to say her name.
Ugh, because you're cowards. Because you're sheep. What have I been doing all this time?
Who's starting us off on this one?
I will. I think this is a must-watch. I'm going to say definitively yes. I could watch Catherine Hahn do anything, basically. I think she's brilliant and funny and can switch from comedy to tragedy incredibly well. And also, in that clip we heard, she's nude in that. And I just love the fact that she is... That was her idea. I love the fact that she is without shame. She's someone who does nude scenes that are supposed to be funny. in a film she did with Paul Giamatti, which I love, it's called Private Life, there's a scene of her anxiously cleaning the bathroom while nude. And it's so funny, but it's heartbreaking too because of her reasons for doing it. But in Agatha All Along, her character leaves the house in such a hurry that she doesn't put her dressing gown on or anything. And we see her bum as she's running across the road. And it was... because it was all her idea, I think that shows you how committed she is to making a show not just work, but one that is funny. And you can't take your eyes off her, which is saying a lot, because when she starts putting her coven together, it also has Patti LuPone in it. The cast in this is amazing, and you're still looking at Catherine Hahn. I think this is just a joy, really. It's Marvel, but in the way that WandaVision was, in that I couldn't care about Marvel at all. But I loved WandaVision, and this is weird enough and cast so brilliantly that I forget it's a Marvel TV show at all. And also, it's perfect for autumn and Halloween, because it's not just about this one witch, it's about all of them. There was a line in the first episode where Aubrey Plaza, who she plays a witch from Agatha's original coven, she turns up to tell her that the coven will soon be arriving to destroy her by burning, hanging, or drowning. And Agatha says, like, she's all beaten up on the floor, and she goes, really? Are there no new options?
Very good. Can I ask you something about it, just by something you said earlier? So with WandaVision, there was a lot of allusions to it,
yeah,
which is terribly clever. But if you're not... If you don't watch telly like that and you don't get the allusions, does it matter? Like James Joyce, Ulysses, supposed to be terribly clever because he's alluding to all sorts of different bits of literature and the classics and stuff. But that frightens me off it because I think, well, I'm read them. I'm not clever enough to get my head round it. Can you watch it on its own merit?
I mean,
nodding thoughtfully, you know, the way people do in screenings, making little notes.
So I watched WandaVision in 2021, and I am not that connected into the Marvel Universe generally. I think I've seen a few of the films, but if you asked me to recount the plot from them, I wouldn't be able to go and tell you. But WandaVision stood out in such a way because it was so different. Basically, and this would take like a long scroll to say what happened in that series, but essentially it features two characters who are stuck within a TV show, or you see a TV show play out. So it starts, I think, in the 1950s and black and white. It's a typical American sitcom, and it contained such attention to detail of all of the little kind of the audience laughter, the fake wooden props, the kind of maybe subtle misogyny that was very rife within TV sitcoms of that era. All of it was just so phenomenally well crafted. And then with each episode, it tapped into a different sitcom, a different genre, a different time.
It was TV made for people who like TV.
Exactly. Yeah. And then slowly but surely, there's another plot that comes through, and this whole world sort of tears apart. And Agatha Harkness, played by Catherine Hahn, I think she became a standout star from that show. I mean, there was a song, Agatha All Along, which ends up becoming the name of this show, which was, I think, was a song that was trapped in everyone's head,
yeah,
along with UK Hun, because it was released from Drag Race the very same week, and that was just in our head for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Yeah.
I think Catherine Hahn ended up with this spin-off show because of Catherine Hahn, because of her performance, because of her character, and because of who she is. I think that's how she ended up with this.
Because she was a strange character actor before this. This kind of made her a star that people know. And now you look back and you go, oh, she was the one who did blah, blah, blah.
Exactly. And this was, I think, her. And I think with this series, you get to see her range, because I agree with Hayley. You see such a vastness between phenomenal comic timing, but also a complexity. Her character is narcissistic, self-absorbed, cheeky. You root for her, even though she's evil. Such great range, such brilliant comic timing. I mean, that first 20 minutes, I mean, trying to unpack exactly what happens here will take a while. But essentially, she is in a spell. She is trapped within a Danish or TV show.
It's Mayor of Easttown, isn't it?
Mayor of Easttown, an American version of a Danish TV show. They manage to capture all of the small details you see in every single female single detective in her 50s.
Yeah, even the flannel shirt.
There's one scene when she gets out of a police car and she doesn't say anything because she's just got a Danish stuck in her mouth as she's entering the building. I wish that went on for longer because that was so glorious. I love the fact that we've had two police detective series this week. And I think, bizarrely, An Agatha All Along was the better one, even though it isn't actually a detective show. My only reservation about Agatha All Along, though, is that for the first 30 minutes, it's incredibly easy to follow. I watched WandaVision 3 years ago. I pretty much understood what was going on. I think there's another film you would have had to have seen to learn about more about her character, but it is separate from the Marvel Universe. As the episodes went on, it did feel like it was getting dragged back into it a little bit, and that there were times I was scratching my head going, oh, hang on, how is this related to who, and who is this related to that? And and that's the frustration I think Marvel is having with people at the moment, is that the moment it brought in the multiverse with everything matters but also it doesn't matter at exactly the same time, plus references going back four films or maybe with a character you've not seen that does not appear in this series, it's great for that level of fan, like if you have been immersed in it, but for everyone else you just go, what? And I think that there is sometimes a risk of it falling into. However, from the episodes that I've seen, it hasn't fallen into it yet, therefore it works.
Also, it's got Joe Locke in it.
He's great.
He's wearing a lot of eyeliner.
And you don't exactly know what he's there for either. I think there's a mystery behind it. But I mean, I just like the fact, final point, because I have gone on a bit of a good rant, I bet. The thing I like about this is that this is a Marvel TV series that feels like it justifies its existence. I think when Disney Plus came about, they were like, yeah, let's do a Marvel series every other week. And I think it just got bogged down by its own.
It got to a point where when we were discussing which shows we were going to review, I was the first one to try and weasel out of talking about another Marvel TV show. But this one, you know, like I say, Catherine Hahn is in it. And it does get to that point where you go, I needed to watch a film 4 films ago to understand it. But really,
that's the issue. See, I've never watched Star Wars. Right,
and it's not. You've never watched Star Wars?
Because it feels like too big now to sort of go, because people are so into it, to go back. I need to go back to the beginning, and then there's some business where you don't start with the first one because they were prequels.
You can just be one of those guys who doesn't believe that the more recent ones exist.
Okay. Well, I could do that, but I kind of feel the same with Marvel. I know there's something clever going on, but I don't know where I've got to start to actually get my head around. So if I started with this, I think I'd be struggling.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I would infuriate the entire Marvel fandom if I in any way suggested what order you end up watching things. I think with Star Wars, I think you start with episode 4, 5, and 6, because that's like space
opera.
Don't
look at me like I know.
Then you maybe watch back the episode 1, 2, and 3, but I would, you know, put that on twice speed. And then watch the last three.
You have to write this down, please.
Okay, sure. I'll send you an email.
Please do that, yes. So what we got then? We got two must-watches.
We got a must-watch, yes. We got two must-watches for Agatha All Along.
Okay, and that's a must-watch even if you don't know anything about Marvel?
Yes.
I think so.
Okay. So before we go, what have we got for next week?
Well, it's just a quick plug, really. We are going to be reviewing Into the Woods with Ed Stafford. It's on Channel 4. It's on Tuesday. We didn't have time to review it this week. It's essentially a show where fathers and sons go into the jungle together.
Oh, no.
So that's a reality TV show concept that we will be reviewing then. And that's it from us, really.
So what, are you going to pick another... You'll pick another two to go with it, though.
Oh, yeah. We'll have a fight on WhatsApp later about what we're going to watch.
It's always on Tuesday morning when we get a copy of the Radio Times. Just lifting the lid of how this show gets put together, getting the Radio Times, scrolling through it frantically, going, what on earth can we actually review that has not been breaking an embargo? And then we make the final list. But that is a show that we have confirmed because it is actually on Channel 4 tomorrow.
I don't, at the end of the year or however you punctuate it, do you ever must-watch awards for the mustest watch
we do a top five usually. I know that Scott keeps a list in
his phone. Looking for my list now.
He's already making notes.
Really?
Well, because I decided that instead of getting to December and then scratching your head being like, what on earth have you watched when I can't even remember what I watched last week?
That's how
I keep notes. So on there so far, I've got Sherwood, I've got Slow Horses, I've got Renegade Now, which was cruelly cancelled by Disney Plus just the other week, which is such a shame. One Day by Netflix. Mm-hmm. I should really hold this to the end of the year rather than just dropping my list now, shouldn't I?
And where are you on the sort of delayed drop, the weekly drops of slow horses where you can't just binge it. Because in this, it feels like something approximating a human rights violation.
I like it. It stops me from being silly and not getting out of bed. It gives you something to look forward to every week.
I love it too. I think a challenge with the binging era is that although it can feel incredibly Moorish, a downside from it is that you therefore do not have anyone to talk it over with, because everybody is in a different place in the plot.
Yeah.
It means that you are so anxious about spoilers with other people when some people haven't seen the show at all. So I think if you manage to have a weekly episode, yes, it's frustrating, and yes, it's to the streamer's benefit because they get more money, but I think it is actually better for TV.
Mm. And a bit of delayed gratification doesn't hurt us. No,
absolutely. Because how many shows have just dropped out of the public consciousness so quickly?
Yeah, we talk about them for 3 days and then...
And then there's on to the next thing.
Yeah. Well, it's been lovely being with you today.
Oh, thank you, Adrian.
Thank you.
I'm going to get stuck into Agatha All Along, whether I'm marvelled up or not, and I will I'll make it work in your honour. Don't forget, you can hear more from Scott and Hayley on Must Watch BBC Sounds each and every week, and email us with your thoughts on the show we've reviewed or your own recommendations anytime at mustwatch@bbc.co.uk. Matt Chorley's coming up next.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Hey, it's 2 o'clock. I'm Matt Shawley, coming to you live from the Labour Party conference in Liverpool, where it's all been kicking off. All smiles for Rachel Reeves. But are the Labour faithful and real voters quite as pleased with her big speech? Plus, what happened when I got behind the wheel of a tractor? What happened when I met Tony Adams, the football legend? Tony Adams, of course I interviewed him in front of John Lennon's Imagine Piano. And you can now listen to live news 24 hours a day on BBC Sounds. Just go to the dial at the top of the Sounds homepage and tap on live news where you can listen along. But first, let's get a news update from Jill McKenzie.
Has promised to make hard but fair choices with a relentless focus on the priorities of the British people. In a speech to the Labour conference in Liverpool, Rachel Reeves also insisted there be no return to austerity. She was briefly interrupted by a pro-Palestinian protester who was shouting about arms sales to Israel. Our political correspondent Alex Forsyth was watching.
I think there was a sort of dual approach here from Rachel Reeves. She wanted to maintain what she believes she has established as a reputation for fiscal credibility, being trusted with the public money, but at the same time, conscious of the fact there has been some criticism about an overly gloomy outlook, she wanted to inject a note of optimism as well.
Nurses in England have rejected the government's offer of a 5.5% pay rise for this financial year. Two-thirds of members of the Royal College of Nursing voted against the deal in a record high turnout. Lebanon's health ministry says heavy Israeli bombardment in the south of the country has killed at least 180 people and injured more than 700 others. The Israeli military says it's targeted Hezbollah positions across southern Lebanon. Our Middle East correspondent Hugo Bachega is in Beirut.
What we're seeing here today is the most intense and widespread wave of Israeli airstrikes in this conflict between Israel and Hezbollah. The fear here is that this could be the beginning of a wider Israeli offensive against Hezbollah that could perhaps include a ground offensive to try to create a buffer zone in the south and push Hezbollah away from the border.
Almost 7 in